The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 8778-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
The Pride of Detroit PODcast is brought to you by Righteous Felon Craft Jerky, and it's the jerky that fuels your Detroit Lions. Righteous Felon Jerky and Meat Sticks are available to Lions players at the training facilities at Allen Park, and each 2-ounce bag of jerky has 16 to 20 grams of protein, and each stick has 8 grams. Trust me, if it's good enough for the Lions and the POD cast, it's going to be good enough for you too. Righteous Felon is based in Westchester, Pennsylvania, and they use locally sourced, all-natural Black Angus beef, and they pride themselves on superior quality, revolutionary branding, and unique flavors that go beyond the stereotypical jerky offering. For our listeners, we have a special offer for you. Go to RighteousFelon.com and use the promo code POD15 at checkout. Get you 15% off your order. That's POD15 at RighteousFelon.com. Welcome to the PODcast, the Pride of Detroit podcast, available on all of your podcasting platforms, live also here on twitch.tv/Pride of Detroit and youtube.com/Pride of Detroit. Just search for us on Pride of Detroit wherever you listen and watch things, and you'll probably find us eventually. Just scroll through all the fake Pride of Detroit accounts out there trying to take what we do. My name is Jeremy Reisman, by the way. I am filling in again for the adequate host, Chris Perfett, who will be back more than soon enough. Just take a little bit of break, doing a little work over at Fox Sports. I'm giving his own company a little plug there, because I know he likes to like fit them in there. Did it for him. You're welcome, Chris. You can find me, by the way, at Detroit Online on Twitter. With me, as always, senior editor of Pride of Detroit, the Rock God, at Ryan_POD on Twitter. Ryan Matthews is here. I always forget how to do the back is the, yeah, that part. We don't need it anymore. We moved past it.
No, we have moved past it. I actually reached out to a guy who's been trying to sell me Pistons season tickets for a while. And he actually let me know how much I could get some VIP tickets for Limp Bizkit this summer. So, you know, I'm trying to put together a little posse to go listen to some new metal this summer, but
Brett Durst is like unrecognizable now. By the way.
Yeah, like I definitely this has flown the shark and jumped the train, whatever it is. But
steady as a mouse.
I totally missed the opportunity back when Fred Durst was playing jazz music back in California. That was the time to go see Fred Durst. But
that's right. Well, this podcast is gonna have nothing to do with Fred Durst for the rest of the time. We have exhausted our Fred Durst talk, so don't worry about that. What we are going to talk about, latest news. We got some Josh Reynolds news. We got some Brock Wright news. We're going to talk some new uniforms. And then in the second segment, this is not an April Fool's joke. We're doing a mock draft. In fact, we've already done a mock draft. Somehow, I was going to say you goaded me into this, but that's the opposite of what happened.
No, this was your idea.
This was somehow my idea. I don't know what got into me yesterday, but we did a mock draft, a 3-round mock. We're going to run through it. We also did like a speed run, which we'll compare to the 3-round mock that we did. But let's start indeed with the latest Lions news. I want to start with Josh Reynolds. Not news that he signed elsewhere, signed with the Denver Broncos. We already knew that. But what we do know now is that the contract details are much different than originally reported. It was originally reported as a 2-year up to $14 million deal. Well, there's a lot of heavy lifting in that up to words, which tends to be the case when
the way these contracts are originally reported, because they're usually reported by the agent. They're the one leaking the news, make their deal look a lot better. But anyways, it's more like a 2-year, $9 million deal. With the cap hits in 2024, $3.5 million this year, $5.5 million next year. And even beyond that, there's only $1 million in guarantees next year, which means they can get out of it after 1 year and really just make it a 1 year, $4.5 million contract, where it's a $3.5 million cap hit this year and $1 million in dead cap next year if you don't keep them around, which is not that bad, right? Like, that seems like a very, I don't know, reasonable contract for him. You know, the Lions, I can't figure this one out, Ryan. It's very strange to me that the Lions like go almost like full court press last week and say, like, we've done everything we wanted except for Josh Reynolds. He's our white whale. We're going to get him. Like, we love him. You know, everything we've said about him, we love him. He's a gritty guy. We've got a million nicknames for him. He can block, he can do whatever. Then the next day he signs elsewhere for a very reasonable deal. So can you make sense of this? And do you think the Lions may have made a mistake here? Not landing him.
Yeah, there's a ton of stuff that's going through my head when it comes to Josh Reynolds, because I do find it a little bit mystifying, the timeline of, you know, getting to hear Brad Holmes talk about how awesome he's done in free agency, and then 24 hours later, the one thing that he was, you know, dinging himself in his self-evaluation was like, well, we're just missing Josh. And then Josh is out the door. And like you said, when the contract details come out and you see that basically the Broncos are on the hook for a year and $4.5 million, I think it's fair to start asking the questions of, like, did they miss an opportunity here to just bring the band back together? Because I think all offseason long, Jeremy, we've been pretty comfortable with, like, you know what? If the offense wants to just get back together as is, as it was, you know, constructed a year ago, we're pretty cool with that. Like, even before Jonah Jackson gets his deal, and maybe even after Jonah Jackson gets his deal, right? We were kind of like, well, it's a little pricey, but, like, wouldn't have hated it. You know what I mean? Like, you could have lived with that. And I think that speaks to Josh too. Like, I think when it comes to the wide receiver room in Detroit, he felt like the veteran presence, did he not? Right? Like, I mean, your top two wide receivers are both still on their rookie contracts. Yep. Josh Reynolds is a guy who the Lions brought in because of his familiarity with Jared Goff. And to me, it would have made a lot of sense just to get this deal done. Now, can I ask you, from Josh's perspective,
right,
why does it make sense to go to Denver?
Opportunity, right?
100%, right?
Yeah. And that's kind of like, the more I'm thinking about this, maybe this, I mean, we can't sit here and criticize and be like, the Lions should have signed him to that Denver Broncos deal, because maybe that wasn't an option. Maybe
that wasn't enough, right?
Right. Maybe the Lions needed to fork out more to bring him back. Maybe he wanted to go elsewhere. Maybe he wanted a bigger opportunity, because he can, I mean, he hears the coaching staff go out at the combine and say, hey, we want Jameson Williams to be in a bigger role next year. We envision him in a bigger role next year. You see them bring back Donovan Peoples-Jones before you, right? Like, they re-sign him before they do you. That can't mean nothing. Granted, it's a much smaller contract than I'm sure what they offered Josh Reynolds. But I think it's always kind of a misnomer to just be like, oh, this team signed this player to this contract, why didn't the Lions do that? Well, it's a two-way street. They have to be able to agree with that. And I'm not reporting anything about Josh Reynolds and saying he didn't want to come back or anything like that. But I think it's worth wondering if maybe some of this fell on Josh Reynolds, why it didn't come together back in Detroit. I do want to point out, and I find this kind of funny, because I was wondering what contract he was coming off of Detroit, and it was a 2-year deal, $6 million. So yeah, he's getting a relatively significant raise. I also find it funny that contract was originally called a 2-year, $12 million deal. So agent doing consistent work every time he gets a new deal here.
Yeah, yeah, that's good stuff.
But yeah, I know it's interesting. It's a little disappointing, because I do think this is it. There does seem to be one missing piece in that wide receiver room, whether it's a veteran or just a body you can rely on. Because while we've said in the past, and we said back on our kind of Josh Reynolds podcast last week, like, it's not unreasonable to think that Jameson Williams and Donovan Peoples-Jones can make up the production that Josh Reynolds and Jameson Williams had last year. They're capable of doing that, but there's no fail safe to me. Like I like Khalif. Maybe Antoine Green takes a step. You know, they're capable guys back there, but it seems like there would needs to be like the same reason they signed Marvin Jones last year, like just to have that extra guy in case. I feel like the Lions need that extra guy in case, and Josh Reynolds would have been that and more. So now I guess what's the plan? Does this become a priority free agent signing? Do you go out and get DJ Chark? Do you draft one early? What's kind of your overlook on the wide receiver need, if it is a big need, or is it just something like you'll fill if you get the opportunity, but you roll with the guys you got if you don't?
It feels kind of like the NFL draft pending, right? Like, let's see what the NFL draft brings the Detroit Lions, where they are when they're picking, if they're maneuvering around the draft board, who's available. I think it's very much dependent upon what happens in the draft. Now, there are a couple things I want to circle back to last year about Josh Reynolds, because I feel like the NFC Championship game left a sour taste in a lot of people's mouths, understandably so, right? However, you look at the numbers that Josh Reynolds put up last year, and I know we're anticipating, or we are expecting, that Jameson Williams can do, if not more, but greater things, right? With those opportunities that are going to be opened up. Josh Reynolds last year was third on the team in first downs receiving. He was of any of these receivers, Amon-Ra St. Brown, a pass catcher like Sam Laporta, Khalif Raymond. Josh Reynolds had an 11.5 ADOT, higher than any of those guys. Now, Jameson Williams was a 16. His ADOT was 16. Now,
not surprising.
Right. So, but you see, like, I think that with, I mean, that number being 11.6, like Amon-Ra was 8, Laporta was 7.4, even somebody like Khalif Raymond, 8.8. Josh Reynolds at 11.5, that's a pretty big jump. Now, I think that speaks to two things, though. One, you have a quarterback who's super comfortable with him and feels like he can get balls to Josh Reynolds where they needed to be, and he could expect Josh Reynolds to be there. But I think that the next thing is, like, is it so easy to just say, okay, we can 100% trust Jameson Williams to just be Josh Reynolds? I don't think that they're the same wide receiver.
Yeah.
I think in terms of, and this is the biggest difference to me. How are you running that dig route? Like, I know that Jared Goff loves throwing that dig route to Josh Reynolds.
Yeah.
That's been the question about Jameson Williams, is like the refinement in route running and timing and having all that stuff down with Jared Goff. This is a big offseason for Jameson Williams.
Maybe
the biggest of his career. And that's crazy to say when year one was rehabbing, year two was, you know, trying to bounce back from being behind in year one.
Yep.
Add to the suspension, add to the injury he suffered in training camp.
Yeah.
This is a really big spot for Jameson Williams, because I think it goes hand in hand with the question you asked me about how do the Lions move forward. Jameson Williams and Khalif Raymond are the only, and Antoine Green are the only three wide receivers that are under contract past 2024.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I think that there has to be some, Jameson Williams has to solidify his spot as a dude on this roster.
I love that you brought up I think Josh Reynolds' biggest asset, which is his chemistry with Jared Goff. And so that's it's not necessarily something you can replace in an offseason, right? Like, everyone says, oh, just draft one at 29. Well,
it's
intangible. Is he going to come in and just like mind meld with Jared Goff? No, it took a half a season for Amon-Ra to get there. And Amon-Ra is the guy who works his butt off like no one else in this draft class probably does. So that's something that's going to be missed. It's not something that we've seen. Like, Jared Goff and Jameson Williams, that has not been locked in really yet at all. Like, it got better last year, but it was nowhere near where it was with Josh Reynolds. And so I think that's to me, the most surprising thing is, like, outside of all the intangible stuff that this coaching staff loves about Josh Reynolds, he goes back to his Rams days with Jared Goff. And that sort of connection is not easy to find in the NFL, and it takes time to develop. So something they're going to miss. Another thing that they could miss is Brock Wright. Brock Wright signs a 3-year, $12 million deal with offer sheet, I should say, with the San Francisco 49ers. The Lions now have two more days as of Wednesday, April 3rd, to make a decision whether they want to match that. I'll just throw the basic question. I know we talked about it a little bit on the call-in show over the weekend, but what's your feelings on this? Where do you think the Lions should go here? Lions, their offer sheet was worth $1,002.985 million on the free agency, the restricted free agent tag. This is moving up to $4 million a year here. Is it worth it for a quote unquote tight end two?
A tight end two who, you know, I think seemingly might be a tight end three on a lot of rosters, right? But with that kind of a pay bump and with a team like the San Francisco 49ers docking Jeremy, I think that is a cause for pause, right? And to think about, like, well, just how valuable is Brock Wright? Maybe we misunderstood how valuable Brock Wright is to an NFL roster. I have to ask you this question. It's just kind of like a curiosity thing, but is it interesting that the Lions are taking all of this time to figure it out with Brock Wright? Like what do you need to take five whole? And I mean, they haven't quite yet. And this podcast might be outdated in an hour, but
right.
I'm just wondering, like, why do you need to take all this time to figure out whether or not you love Brock Wright or not?
It's holiday weekend.
Okay.
I don't know.
He has risen. Yeah. Brock Wright's contract offer has risen.
I don't know. I mean, to me, there's no real hurry. You might as well talk it over with everyone, talk it over with your tight ends coach, talk it over with your offensive coordinator, your GM, your salary cap guy. Can you get all that done in a matter of 24 hours? Yeah, probably, but you don't need to rush this decision. And as Andrew Brandt always says, you know, deadline spur action. So I'd imagine you're right. It could literally happen at any moment. For all I know, I haven't checked Twitter in 30 minutes. Maybe it already did happen. I would expect probably something closer to the deadline, just because you want to exhaust all your resources and make sure you're making the right decision there. And it's a tricky one, right? I do think people are a little bit overstating the size of the contract, considering they were essentially offering him $3 million a year. And this is $4 million a year. We also learned that it's only $6 million of it is guaranteed, so half of it is guaranteed. So the way you look at some of these contracts, a 3-year deal is really normally a 2-year deal. We don't know the full breakdown of it, but over on Pride of Detroit, I ran through a projected what a contract could look like, and yeah, it could essentially amount to a 2-year $8 million deal. So is a 1-year $3 million deal that much different than a 2-year $8 million deal? I mean, it literally is, yes. It's a million more per year, but I don't know. And some people are arguing, well, if you're not willing to shell out 1 year, $4.5 million for Josh Reynolds, why would you be willing to shell out 2 years, $8 million for Brock Wright? And I think that's a fair argument to make, a fair thing to wonder about. My concern is just, I think not matching this deal leaves the Lions in a bit of a lurch. You're already deep into free agency. I'm not sure you're going to find someone capable of being a full-time run blocking tight end at this point on the level of Brock Wright. I think people tend to overlook that talent on Brock Wright because they look at the PFF grades and it's like, oh, he's in the 50s. You can get that. There's 80 guys with a better run blocking grade. To me, that's an instance where the PFF grade does not match the tape in my eyes. And then like I've said multiple, like a ton of people are just like, oh, draft Tip Raymond. Okay, so your solution is one specific player in the draft. What if you don't get him?
Yeah, no, it's a fair question. I think the other point to bring up that we talked about on the call-in show was, I mean, special teams. I mean, he had 177 special team snaps last year too. So, I mean, like, this is a guy that you trust in a few phases, right? Like, not only do you trust him to run that awesome, you know, that
his
crosser
play.
Route.
The Brock Wright play.
The Brock Wright play. Yeah. That's what it'll forever be known as. But yeah, I think they clearly really like this guy. And the 49ers are going to see just how much they really do like him. I think the one maybe apples to apples comparison between him and Josh Reynolds, right? Because you could make an argument, I think, that you could say that for what they both did offensively, maybe like same level of importance last year, right? Like Brock Wright plays such a big role as a tight end too, as that blocker, you know, special teams, all these things rolled into one. who are the guys behind him? With Josh Reynolds, there's Jameson Williams. Okay, you drafted that guy 12th overall. Behind Brock Wright, there's James Mitchell, the great unknown commodity,
yes.
a very unproven talent who they've given some time to. He's another one of the Brad Holmes draftees who had to come back from an ACL injury. And, you know, like you always talk about, Jeremy, that first year back, you're getting your feet back underneath you. And not only are you making the jump from, you know, college to the NFL, but you're also rehabbing from an injury. And then, you know, ends up on IR last year after the Broncos or after the Cowboys game. And again, kind of left the Lions in a bit of a lurch. That's why they had to go out and get Zach Ertz. That's right. Why, you know, they had Anthony Firkser playing in the NFC Championship game. So it does, like, it does the one thing that we've all been talking about Brad Holmes having the luxury of doing going into this draft, which is going into the draft without having to draft for a need. And yeah, if you don't sign Brock Wright, you're left with a need.
No question. All right. Let's talk about the new uniforms. We keep teasing it. We teased it on the last show and then we didn't talk about it. So let's actually do it this time.
The ultimate tease.
Yes. April 18, which just so happens to be my birthday, is when they're going to release the uniforms. I don't know why I need to throw that in there, but I did. Make it personal. Make it about myself.
All right.
So we don't know a ton. We know they're going to have different pants, which is something that Rod Wood said a couple times over last week. We know that they're going to honor the colors. We know the William Clay Ford patch is going to be different. Might not be a patch anymore is kind of the sense that I was getting. We know the numbers are going to look better. What else do we know? They're going to alter the alternate helmet, it sounds like.
Yeah, like make some changes to it.
Yeah. But other than that, we don't know a ton. So I guess let me throw it to you. Just what do you want to see? What are you hoping to see?
The numbers more clearly.
Okay. Yeah. That it.
Which is something that Rod Wood mentioned, right? Like,
so Dan Miller mentioned it
as a, yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's fair. But are you, so to me, the question is, are they going like full scale? This is going to look a lot different, or little tweaks here and there? Because I'm going to be completely honest, I like the jerseys. I like the uniforms right now. They're fine. They're good. They're solid. I think they do a good job of honoring the past in terms of color schemes. And outside of the numbers, I don't have a problem. I'd like them to do a new alt. And I think from all the relative negative feedback they get from the Grays, I think there will be a new alt. This is me speculating, not reporting. But other than that, I don't really want a full scale change. I would rather have like little minor tweaks. And I know if that's what happens, people are going to be underwhelmed and they're going to be upset. But I'd be fine. Like, that's kind of what I want. Just like, I don't know, make it slightly modern. I don't really know what that means because I'm old, but make it look sleeker, but not that different. And and outline the jersey numbers with something that isn't already the color that it is.
Yeah, that you know what? I can't argue with any of those. I guess I'll pitch a couple of questions back at you. When you say sleeker and you talk about alternate uniforms, everybody wants to talk about an alternate black uniform.
Mm-hmm.
Are you pro?
No.
No.
No. No. Why? It's not. Yeah. It's not. I can't say it's never been a Lions uniform color because it has, even beyond the Matt Millen era, that there was like in the 40s a black uniform that technically, I guess, becomes part of the lore. But no, to me, black seems like a fallback color to just like replace. Like, if you want to look modern, you got to do this like Oregon Ducks thing where you're, I don't know. I admit, like, part of this is old man waving at the cloud. But to me, it's just, I don't know. That's like it's become a trope at this point to be like, oh, these, look at our tough black jerseys.
No. Yeah. It seems unoriginal in the sense that, like you said, everybody around the league, when they need to freshen things up a bit, it's like, okay, well, we can do an alternate uniform. What color do you want to do? Let's just do black.
Yeah.
When I think that there's an opportunity, I mean, everybody loves the blueberries. Like,
yeah,
it's fine. Like, just run with those when you want to go like quote unquote color rush.
Yeah.
But I think the thing that's most interesting to me that Rod Wood said is like the options. right? And I know he kept on talking about the pants and, you know, having different options. I think that's the that's probably the cooler aspect of the uniform redesign, is that just having more options for what you can put together, especially when you're doing your Madden Sims. You know what I mean?
That's right.
Like, you'd just be able to run through like 100 different colors of pants.
Ryan, you know what also has a ton of options?
Oh my God. Righteous Felon Craft Jerky.
That's right. And the Pride of Detroit podcast is brought to you by Righteous Felon Craft Jerky. It's the jerky that fuels your Detroit Lions. That's right. Righteous Felon Jerky and meat sticks are available at two Lions players at their training facility at Allen Park. Each 2-ounce bag, which I'm currently holding right here, contains 16 to 20 grams of protein. This one in particular has 20, the max, which is the awesome Habanero Escobar flavor. Habanero heat. And they come at it with heat. I'm not, if you're a spicy meat fan, you got it. If it's good enough for the Lions, it's good enough for you. Righteous Felon is based in Westchester, Pennsylvania. They use locally sourced all natural black Angus beef and pride themselves with superior quality, revolutionary branding, and unique flavors that go beyond the stereotypical jerky offering, like your good turkey jerky flavor.
Marilyn Monroe.
That's okay. That's a different one, but yes.
Soul Survivor.
You're naming them.
Yeah, that's the Korean barbecue. Marilyn Monroe is the Old Bay seasoning. Like,
that's right. And the Korean barbecue.
Gotta love it.
Yeah, they got like gochujang in some of these. Like, it's honestly, it is. I know it sounds like we're pitching, but at the same time, I'm regularly stocked with Righteous Felon because it is legitimately good, and the flavors are extremely unique.
Yeah, it's a nice snack, and the way that they portion the bags too, the package size, it's nice because then the jerky doesn't go stale or anything like that. Yeah, it's awesome.
Your freshness packet in there, and I'm telling you, like, I'm gonna keep saying it. This if you're dieting and counting your calories and your, you know, protein, your macros, all that sort of stuff, 20 grams of protein and 140 calories in one of these bags, that's like a perfect midday snack where you're not like grabbing a candy bar, you're not shoveling Doritos down your face. Get a little Righteous Felon Craft Jerky, and we're gonna sweeten the pot for you because guess what? We got a coupon code.
Oh, what's the code?
You don't know by now? We've been doing this for like 2 years.
I just want to hear you say it.
POD15 will get you 15% off, and you can reuse that. You hear all the time these ads are just like, do you have to be a first-time customer? It only works for initial orders. No. Use it over and over. Perpetuity. It's a big word. Just means you can use it every time. POD15 at righteousfelon.com. Get you some craft jerky when we come back on the POD cast. History is being made. A 3-round mock draft that I actually helped with.
More than helped with.
More than help. Don't give me too much credit. I don't want it. We'll be right back with a mock draft here on the POD cast.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
And we are back here on the POD cast. We took a very long break there, and I think maybe that was me trying to avoid this, Ryan, if I'm going to be completely honest. But against every inch of my being, we're doing a mock draft here, a 3-round mock draft. I don't participate in a lot of mock drafts. I don't particularly like the exercise. But actually, this was a good kind of first step into the draft, I thought, because we ran into some problems that I think the Lions might actually run into with the draft. We introduced some new names to our own repertoire in terms of learning this draft class. And I don't know, I just, it was worthwhile. Yes, including with that guy that you're pointing to now. Before we get into it, I'll kind of lay the ground rules of how we made it work. We did not do any trades on purpose. We just wanted to straight shot this, make the Lions have their original picks. We use Pro Football Network's mock draft simulator. So if you're upset about certain players being gone at certain spots, blame them. Blame their algorithm. But don't, I mean, like, don't at Kentley Platt or anything, because, like, that dude's awesome. Why would you do that?
Yeah. Yeah. Why would you do that other than to say, hey, thank you so much for creating RAS and it's free? Yeah. Thank you.
Yes, exactly. All right. That being said, let's get to it. So obviously, the Lions have the 29th pick. We run through the simulator. Let's talk about some guys that weren't there, that were completely off the board, that we couldn't even talk about. Jackson Powers Johnson is probably one of the main ones that Lions fans are in love with. That guy, he was off the board at 26, so he just missed out. Cooper DeJean, another guy, 25th off the board. Jahzir Newton, 12th off the board. He's a guy that I've seen fall to the Lions a lot in some recent mocks, but off the board, top half the draft there. Chop Robinson also goes off the board. Now here's the first conundrum that we ran into, Ryan. We had 11 guys we were considering here. Literally 11 guys. I'm going to run through them really quick.
Yeah.
Kingsley Suamataya, Tyler Guyton, Graham Barton, Ryan Thomas, Keon Coleman, Kool-Aid McKinstry, TJ Tampa, Kamari Lassiter, Ennis Rakestraw, Darius Robinson, and Devondre Sweat are all guys that I think have a certain amount of fit in Detroit, certainly fill a potential relative lead, even though we know Brad Holmes isn't necessarily running up that strategy. And then, like, I think the talent is there with a lot of these guys and the fit is there. And so I don't know who are, like, the main guys sticking out to you at this point.
I think the thing that stuck out to me the most, right, was, like, look at just, like, these positions, like you said, of quote unquote relative need long term. Right. Because that's what we're kind of dealing in with Detroit's position right now, drafting at 29. Being able to hit on a lot of the draft picks that they've already, you know, hit on in recent years, but you're there with offensive line, wide receiver, cornerback, and, you know, there's a couple defensive linemen in there for fun. But
yep.
I think the thing that stuck out to me the most was the Lions could 100% get a wide receiver at 29. Like, no moving required. Like, and I know we're going to take a look at our second mock draft where the player that we do draft at 29 here isn't available then, but, like, there were still other names that were available there. So if you're very concerned about the Lions losing Josh Reynolds and you're like, oh man, how are the Lions ever going to replace a player like Josh Reynolds? They could do it at 29. Like, there's going to be at least a couple of names there that I would imagine that the Lions would be interested in.
Yeah. And there are a lot of varying opinions on the cornerback class here, but Kool-Aid kind of stuck out as a guy that was very much in play here. I think he was the second highest rated guy on Pro Football Network's board that was still available. He's 27th. And so I don't know. I think a lot of people, there's kind of a precipitous drop off after Terrion Arnold and Quinyon Mitchell. And you wouldn't necessarily be wrong with that. I think Nate Wiggins was also already off the board here. So a lot of people are like, well, if you want to go get TJ Tampa or Kool-Aid or Lassiter, maybe you wait until 61. But I'm already kind of teasing it, but, like, a lot of the guys that we wanted here were not available at 61. In fact, every single one of these guys that I just named off, the 11 guys that we were considering, none of them lasted to 61. And so you're missing out on a tier here if you don't go corner, if you don't go really any of these positions, right? And so, like, this is what made it really challenging when we got to that second pick is, like, there's a tier here that I feel like lasts until maybe, like, the mid-40s. So is this an opportunity to either trade back, or will the Lions get kind of greedy and think, like, okay, well, we don't want to miss on this tier. Do we trade up from the second round into kind of the middle to top of that second round? And I think those are legitimate things that they might do.
Yeah, that was something that you pointed out that, again, without doing this specific exercise of a mock draft, you don't really see, like, hey, oh, look at this run of players from, you know, from 30 to the mid 40s. There's four or five names that, you know, a lot of Lions fans are talking about in all their mock drafts that it seems, yeah, like Brad Holmes maybe either would maybe move up to get into a spot like that, or would entertain the idea of disappointing everybody on draft day on Thursday night and saying, right, nope, we're not drafting at 29. See you tomorrow.
All right, let's get into the pick here. To me, it was kind of obvious who to pick here, because this person stood out among the rest in terms of just best player available. He was 20th on Pro Football Network's mock. He fits what I think some people consider a pretty big need. That's Brian Thomas, the wide receiver. To me, I don't think he's going to be there, but we've even like teased the idea that he could be. We talked about it a little bit on the mainline show the other day. I noticed in the Detroit News' mock, he went right before the Lions pick. And so to me, like, this is a guy, you've been looking for your ex receiver. You've been looking for maybe another big play threat, another guy that could fill Josh Reynolds' role. And to me, the thing that really sold it for me is I was looking back on his LSU career, and he was paired with Malik Nabers, right? A guy who's probably going to go in the top 15. Malik Nabers is like this blazing fast guy who takes the top off of offenses. I think he's going to be pretty comfortable here with a guy like Jameson Williams filling the Malik Nabers role and just being able to compliment him perfectly like he did in college. So I love this fit. I love the pick. There's a little physicality to his game that's missing, even though he's a 6'3", 209-pound guy, that I think the Lions are going to have to maybe hammer into him a little bit. And so maybe that makes him not a culture fit and maybe not a Brad Holmes dude. But to me, the talent speaks for itself. I mean, what 17 touchdowns last year? That's ridiculous.
Ridiculous. And then also like a 9.97 RAS. Like the guy's like incredibly gifted, right? And I think the thing, you hit the nail on the head when it comes to, you want an ex receiver, here's your guy.
Yeah.
And going into our next pick, like talking about who we eventually got to it here at 61, I think this is, again, one of the nice exercises about these mock drafts is like, if you don't take a player like this now, well, then you're making some concessions on the players who are at that position, wide receiver, by the time you get around to 61.
Yeah. The last thing I wanted to say on Brian Thomas is contested catch dude, right? That's something that I think the Lions have been missing a little bit. I know. And to me, it's not like he's able to separate too. This isn't a situation where he's like Marvin Jones, where it's like he's not getting any separation, but if you fit it in a window, he's going to catch it anyways. He's getting separation. And also, if it's a bad throw and he has to come back and get it and contested catch it, he's going to. He finished 32nd in the nation in contested catch rate per PFF. So I want one of those dudes.
This is your ADOT guy to replace Josh Reynolds, right? Like 100%. There's no drop off.
Yep. All right, let's get into that second round pick, pick 61. As I mentioned, all those guys we mentioned as options for 29 are all off the board. Also off the board, which are some popular names, Cooper Beebe is off the board. Zach Frazier, the center, is off the board. So our next list of candidates that we had here as potential picks at 61, tight end Ben Sinnott, edge Braylon Trice, edge Marshawn Nealon, Braden Fisk, the defensive tackle, Mike Sainristil, the Michigan corner, and Wake Forest corner, Kalen Carson. Those are the six that we considered.
Yeah. And again, like, you're in another spot too, where it's like edge defenders. Yep. Lions could use a player like that. Hey, you know, Brad Holmes has never been shy about, you know, drafting a guy like, I'm not saying Aaron Donald, but an undersized defensive tackle who has some athleticism and pass rushing chops, and a guy like Braden Fisk. And I think that not going the Michigan cornerback was like the part of this exercise too, where it was like, let's learn about some other players. Right. So
yeah,
As a noted big Oakland Grizzly fan, I would be totally cool with Mike Sainristil here, right? Like I feel like that's a great pick, especially with what, you know, we gleaned from the owners meetings and wanting to have more positional versatility with Brian Branch moving him back to safety. There's a role to draft a nickel corner at 61, and that would be a great spot to get a guy like that. However, we ended up going with Wake Forest's Kalen Carson. A guy who I think, Jeremy, upon doing some research, totally fits the mold for not only a Dan Campbell guy, but I think somebody who, as this defense wants to become more man coverage heavy,
yeah,
this guy seems to fit the bill.
Yeah. And I know a lot of people are going to scream this is a reach, and maybe it is. And I also want to be clear. You were like, we're drafting Sanders still, right? And I'm like, I don't want to. That's boring. And I listen, those defensive linemen too, 100% in play here. But this was a little bit more about getting to know these players a little bit more. And Kalen Carson is a guy that, you know, I've seen projections anywhere from second round to fifth round. Pro Football Network had him, I think, in the 70s. So it seemed like okay value there. But a lot of people aren't as high as on him. But to me, it's all about the fit, right? It's all about the football character. It's all about the intangibles, because we know that the Lions value those sort of things. And so, again, like I understand most people are going to say it's reach and whatever, but like tough physical, 6'1", 195, supreme run defender, 83.4 run defense grade per PFF last year. And like you said, just a pure man guy who I think is going to fit. And the thing that I love about him most is he still seems a little bit unpolished. So landing in Detroit is almost a perfect situation for him. We don't have to throw him right into a starting role. There are players that are capable of starting already on this roster. So you get him in, you get him comfortable into your scheme. Maybe you start putting him in a role towards the end of the season. And then year two, he hits the ground running as a long-term need for this team, right? You don't have guys that are signed to long-term deals here. And so to me, like, yeah, maybe a little bit of a reach, but it's just, to me, he's an intriguing prospect that isn't getting talked about enough. He's such a good fit for what the Lions want to do that maybe he's a better fit for the Lions' third round pick, which is, you know, I mean, it's only 12 picks later, right? We're talking 61 versus 73. And so if you're okay with picking him at 73 and you think this is a crazy reach at 61, I think you're overreacting. But to get, like, the other thing to think about here too is, like, after 73, you're not picking, you're sitting there for four hours sitting on your hands, right? You're not picking until the fifth round. So if you want a guy that you believe is in this range of talent, and listen, there are other corners that we probably could have picked too, but I just really like the fit of Kalen Carson so much that I jumped the gun here, but I was really excited about this pick.
Yeah. It's an interesting prospect to think about. Again, like you said, the Lions going corner here, and the quality of corner that you get here versus the quality of corner you get, you know, so many picks later. And the of the other guys that we considered, like, I think this is the good time to talk about a guy like Marshawn Nealand, right? Mm-hmm. I love the player. I think he's great. I think that he's really redundant when it comes to figuring out who Josh Pascal is. Yeah. Right. And I think that when we were kind of having this discussion too about, like, okay, like, hey, if the Lions want to take an edge player here, right? This is another, you talk about two positions like edge and corner. After round one and round two, you're really like, it's a developmental prospect. It's a guy that, you know, is going to take some time to mature and percolate before. But the Lions have the luxury, like you said, to do that with cornerback because they have some guys ahead of him. It's an interesting pick, and we are both on board with it. Let's talk about 73, though, because this is a guy that I feel like is probably on even less people's radars because his own university school doesn't even know exactly where he lines up. Yeah.
Yeah. Worth noting, all of the guys we just listed were still available outside of Braylon Trice. He went before then. So, I mean, listen, Braden Fisk is another guy that we probably should have talked a little bit more about. But again, like, the Lions have invested in three techs now. All right. They have TJ Reader. Aleem McNeil is a guy that they probably are going to re-sign at some point. I like Braden Fisk a lot, and his athletic numbers are ridiculous. And he could very well be the guy. Again, like, I don't want to read too much into what the Lions currently have, because we know that if Brad Holmes just really likes the guy, he's going to take him. So all these guys all on the board. But again, This mock draft was a little bit leaning towards guys that we felt people should know more about. And so we can just jump right into him. Yale offensive tackle / guard, Kron. I'm going to mess it up again. Amagaji.
Nailed Amagaji. It, I think.
A really fascinating prospect. There's a whole article that Dane Brugler wrote about him. Relatively new to football, but started, we're pretty sure, at left guard 2 years ago at Yale, although a couple other publications said he started at right guard. He's been their left tackle for the past 2 years. What do you like about him?
Just in terms of like a prospect who I think makes a ton of sense for the Detroit Lions specifically. And I'll tell you why, because his offensive line coach at Yale. I thought this was an awesome quote from the Dane Brugler article. Yeah. Talking about, you know, hey, you get this guy now, and at this point in his football career, he can step in and play guard. And I think that's the clearest path to quote unquote playing time for a guy who is as green as Amagaji is. But you know, his offensive line coach was like, long-term, like you're getting an offensive tackle. And that's kind of the position the Lions are in, right? Like you want to kind of shore up that interior of the offensive line. There isn't a whole lot of depth beyond, you know, the starters, right? You're not going into last year where you had Vitae and you had Graham and you had Jonah. Like there were, you know, Graham was excess going into last year.
Right.
Your excess this year is Colby Sorsdahl.
Right.
Still a very much in a work in progress and Coyote Iwuasika, you know, again, developmental guys. I think there's no harm, Jeremy, in drafting a developmental guy who has upside to be your starting left or right tackle.
Yeah. And so a couple of things to note about Amagaji, coming off a torn quad. So him and DJ Reader will be doing rehab together. Although to be clear, that happened a long time ago. That happened months ago. And he's actually expected to work out at his pro day later this week, which is April 3rd. Massive arms like that. The physical part of him that is just freak like is his 36 3/4 inch arms, which I think is in the 99th percentile. But he's also super athletic, moves really well. And my favorite quote from Pro Football Network's profile on him is, quote, verified mauler who relishes the chance to bury opponents when they give up leverage. Very much going to be active in the run game, going to be the road grader that the Lions require pretty much from all five offensive line positions. And yeah, like that flexibility, we've talked about it all offseason, and we don't know what the future is with a guy like Taylor Decker. This isn't us trying to push him out the door or anything, but it gives the Lions options. And again, like I think a lot of people are going to look at our haul and say, okay, Brian Thomas is probably going to start right away and give you a lot of contributions. Kalen Carson, I don't know, probably not. Kieran Amagaji, probably not in year one. Deal with it. That's where this team is at. You have to start drafting for the future, and whether Amagaji would be your future right guard, or left tackle, I think he's capable of doing all those things. So why not draft him in the third round, give him a year to incubate, figure out where he's best at, and then he'll hit the ground running in 2025. I think that's a great use of your third round pick, honestly.
Yeah. And I know there's a little bit of a leap here, right? You're talking about a guy who played at the FCS level, right? Yep. You played at an Ivy League school. So there's a big leap there, right? But again, that Brugler article, I suggest everybody go and check it out. But like, I mean, this isn't a guy who's like, hey, I have 36 inch long arms. You know, I'll figure it out. No, like it was mentioned like workout sessions with Willie Anderson, former 13-year NFL veteran lineman. When he came back to campus, he was grinding in the film room with his offensive line coach.
He went to Yale. He's smart.
Yeah. Right. Smarter than the people who input where he lined up, apparently. But anyways, Jeremy, I think to your point, though, like this is the new way that business is going to be done in the draft.
Yeah.
So get used to it.
So like I'm looking at the overhaul and I feel pretty good about it. You got some long-term positions of need at corner and wide receiver and offensive tackle. I think people might come away disappointed that they didn't invest in the defensive line, which is something they've pretty much done every draft so far. But I'm not saying the defensive line is a finished product, but to me, it just, the strengths never really lined up with the Lions pick with like, the only guy that I really considered, Darius Robinson, is still a guy that just screams Dan Campbell player. And if he's there at 29, which a lot of people think he will be, seems like not an open case, but like a great fit. But again, you kind of run into that. Okay, what does that mean for Josh Pascal, what does that mean for John Kaminsky? Can you fit all those guys onto one roster for 1 year? I guess, but
how many closed defensive ends do you need?
Yeah, right. All right. So that's kind of the long, we spent like a good 45 minutes on that draft.
Probably, yeah.
Then we just wanted to kind of speed run it and just see what other options, if we went a different direction with the first pick, how the rest of the draft would follow. You guys can decide whether you like this one more or not, but I'm going to run through all three picks. Johnny Newton was there on the next one, and we just felt that was too good to pass up. Again, it's kind of a weird situation where it's like, okay, where are you going to put him in year one? We'll figure that out later. It's an awesome disruptor, three tech guy that can give you some juice from pass rush in the interior defensive line. We get Xavier Leggett, who we've talked about a couple times on this podcast, wide receiver, and then Christian Mahogany. We're kind of targeting some of the same positions here, except we, instead of investing in the secondary, we invested in Johnny Newton on the defensive line, but we hit wide receiver, we hit guard, we hit offensive line, that future need. What do you think about this one compared to the first one?
Yeah, I think the thing that's interesting about Newton being at 29, which I don't think is going to happen, but in some world where it does happen,
yeah.
If he's available, the medicals check out with the Jones fracture that he suffered in his foot and he played with in the second half of last year's season at Illinois. To your point, Jeremy, about getting out of the field, you're talking about a position where you really want your guys playing 60% of the snaps at most, right? So like you can find a role for him as early as he's ready for it.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can get him on the field in a number of different situations. I think he's probably my favorite pick of any of these, but I'm pretty excited. Like, yes, the drop off between Brian Thomas and Xavier Leggett is a big one, but I think you still get a really intriguing prospect for what the Lions are in need for in that X receiver in Leggett.
Yeah. Listen, I think if you're talking immediate need, the second draft is probably better. Johnny, like you said, you can find a role for Newton, even if there isn't a starting role for him right away. Xavier Leggett could certainly come in and bring in stuff. I don't know if he would start right away. I probably think he wouldn't, honestly, but you'd certainly get him some reps. He'd be your wide receiver four right away, probably sneak into maybe a big role by the end of the season. Then even Christian Mahogany, I think, is another run mauler, interior, future offensive line, works very much in the same way the Amagaji pick does. So I can argue, like, our live audience is like, this second draft is way better. Why didn't you just pick that one? And part of it is like, okay, we're picking guys that everyone already knows about, right? We're picking guys that people are familiar with. And I just think the draft also fell a lot more favorably, where I didn't feel like having Xavier Leggett at 61 didn't feel like, oh my God, we just lost out on this huge tier of players, like it did in the first mock. But overall, like, I'm not hating either of those drafts. I think the two main takeaways I came away from this is, like, don't expect to get three starters and three picks, and that like 30 to 45 range where it's just like, there are a lot of players there that I'd probably be happy with at 29, but a lot of players that aren't going to be there at 61. So I just wish the Lions had more picks there. And part of me made me wish that the Lions had that second, third round pick so that they could maybe move up from 61, like use your second and your second, third to move up into the first half of the second round to get where I think the juicy part of the draft is. But it is what it is. Brett Holmes is going to find his dude somewhere.
Sure. Yeah. And then really it comes down to how many first round grades do they have on players, right? Like if they have those, you know, like last year with Sam Laporta and Brian Branch, you know, if there is a first round grade on a guy, like Brad Holmes is not going to shy away from trading up and making that happen. The one last observation I have about our drafts and both of them, really, I mean, like a guy like Leggett, not a ton of experience. A guy like Amagaji, FCS player, right? Like, I had zero concerns with drafting those kind of players though with this coaching staff, right? Like in yesteryear, hey, like maybe I'm a little bit concerned that there isn't a ton of college production or tape or experience, but if they're players who fit the mold of what this organization is looking to get, I trust the coaching staff to do what they've been doing best, and to coach up talent.
Well, there you have it. We've done a mock draft. The floodgates are now opened. We are, what, four weeks away from the NFL draft at this point. And I have to imagine most of what we're going to be talking about on these podcasts from here until then is indeed the NFL draft. We finally kicked that door open as much as I wanted to keep it shut for as long as we did. It's going to be all draft all the time. We might even bring back our live mock drafts on Twitch and YouTube. So make sure you're subscribed over there. If you're listening on the podcast, go to youtube.com/@Pride of Detroit, subscribe over there, go to twitch.tv/Pride of Detroit, follow over there. And if you want to subscribe over there too, that'd be awesome. Either way, plenty of draft coverage coming your way, but until next time, that's Ryan Matthews over there. Wait, depending that over there. I'm Jeremy Reisman. Thank you all for listening. It's chaos. Be kind.
The Pride of Detroit PODcast is brought to you by Righteous Felon Craft Jerky, and it's the jerky that fuels your Detroit Lions. Righteous Felon Jerky and Meat Sticks are available to Lions players at the training facilities at Allen Park, and each 2-ounce bag of jerky has 16 to 20 grams of protein, and each stick has 8 grams. Trust me, if it's good enough for the Lions and the PODcast, it's going to be good enough for you too. Righteous Felon is based in Westchester, Pennsylvania, and they use locally sourced, all-natural Black Angus beef, and they pride themselves on superior quality, revolutionary branding, and unique flavors that go beyond the stereotypical jerky offering. For our listeners, we have a special offer for you. Go to RighteousFelon.com and use the promo code POD15 at checkout. Get you 15% off your order. That's POD15 at RighteousFelon.com.